here and welcome to the Pack Heavy podcast. Now, this podcast is for anyone who works in the hospitality and food manufacturing industries who use flexible packaging to get their products to market. Featuring interviews with guests who have traveled the path that you're on so that you can learn from their successes and failures and engage in the mindset required to go all in on your vision. I call this mindset the Pack Heavy mentality, and it's primarily driven by deliberate action and extreme organization. You gather market intelligence, put a strong plan in place, organize the appropriate resources, and then confidently test your hypothesis against reality. So if you're ready to pack heavy on your vision, you're in the right place, and I'm excited to have you here. Before we kick off today, I'd love to just put the word out there that I'm really hunting down for some feedback on the show. I know that quite a few of you are listening, which I'm really grateful for. We have some regular and frequent downloads all throughout the week on each episode, and I can see that there are some episodes right back at the start that, you know, keep on ticking along nicely as well. But what I'd really love is to receive some feedback. So whether it's through a comment on the platform that you listen to the podcast on, or a testimonial or a rating, or even by shooting me an email, I'd love to hear about what it is on the show that you love. I'd love to hear about some future content that you'd love to get your hands on so that I can help you move the ball forward in your business and your print projects as well. So anything would be highly sought after on my end. It's one thing that I've found, as we know, when we're starting a business or we're getting something out into the world, is, you know, customer feedback is critical. And I feel at times as if I'm speaking out into the void and I'm not necessarily hearing something back, and I'd like to change that up. So please, if you've got a couple of moments, that would mean the world to me. And it's also a great way to get the podcast out to other listeners as well. Just due to the algorithm that's built into the platform that you listen to, whether it's Spotify or Amazon, Amazon Podcasts or Apple Podcasts, when you give it a rating and when you leave some feedback, it bumps us back to a spot that's relevant for listeners out there looking for this kind of content. So yeah, please, if you've got the time, I'd really appreciate it. Cheers. Good morning and welcome to episode 28. Today, I'm excited to sit down and chat with Nia Chanalia, founder and owner of Switch Grocery. Based in Toronto, Ontario, Switch is a proud Canadian online startup retailer of low-carb food products from across the country and around the world. Nia and her team have found a niche position as a trusted source for diabetics, people on keto and paleo diets, and people who are looking for healthier food options for their families. Recently, Switch successfully closed an angel round with Clearco's Clear Angel Fund, which I'm really actually looking forward to hearing all about. Nia, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here, Hayden.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. You're a few hours ahead of me in Toronto at the moment. How's your morning been?
Not bad. I have my coffee, I have my water. We're good to go.
You're set. And your two-year-old, your little boy, he's where is he at the moment? Is he in daycare or is he with your husband?
He is in daycare.
Yeah, beautiful.
And my husband and I share an office, so I kicked him out.
Yeah. So you're upstairs at the moment, are you? Good stuff. So you've been an extremely busy person over the years, and I've gone back and I've read your bio on LinkedIn, and you've got an amazing history. And I mean, we could start anywhere right now, but what I'm really looking for is I'd love to hear about where you're from, where you grew up. You're obviously a first generation immigrant into Canada, and I'd love to hear your story there as well. And, you know, what brought your parents out and so on. So let's take it right back to the very start. What brought you across to Canada, and how old were you when you got here?
Well, my dad made the decision for me.
Right.
So yes, to step back, right now, just to, you know, so everyone can place me, I'm in my late 30s. I have an almost 2-year-old, as you said, yep. Can't believe it. I have a dog, have a partner, a very loving partner, and a business, and actually 2 jobs. So taking it back, I actually, yes, as you said, I'm a first generation immigrant. I used to not be so proud to say that, because when I was a teenager, it wasn't a sexy thing to be an immigrant. Mm-hmm. Not that it is now either, right? So, but now it's nice to be able to say that and to actually be able to own it. I spent the first 13 years of my life in New Delhi, in India. And then my dad made the call to move. We had 2 choices. It was Australia or Canada.
Yeah, that seems to be the 2 choices that have come up in conversation a lot for people. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they chose Canada. So
do you have family in Australia as well?
I actually do. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah.
It kind of went both ways. And yeah. I actually have family in the US as well. A lot of my family moved to the US, Canada, Australia in, and the UK in the 70s, 80s, 90s. We came in the 90s.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went, and then after that, I went to high school here. Mm. So 13 to 18, worked every job. I worked at Canada's Wonderland, retail. I worked, I did dishes at a fast food retail shop store. Yep. And yeah, so I did that. And then I went to Wilfrid Laurier University. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay. It's in a town called Waterloo, which is the birthplace of a lot of startups. Mm-hmm. And I went to school there, and I decided first I was going to go into marketing, decided to do accounting. So my dad was a CA. My great uncles were CAs. My brother's a CA. My partner's a CA. It's
in your blood.
It's in my blood, unfortunately. My mom's an artist, and I think she's just sad that none of us became artists, but oh well. Yeah. So I decided to do accounting, and I actually got my first shot at Ernst & Young. It's an accounting, one of the top four accounting firms.
Yes. Yeah, I'm familiar.
In the world, actually. And it was, I had a really great experience there. I ended up staying for 10 years, which is 90 in public accounting.
It's like dog years. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then after that, I moved to a not-for-profit, a Canadian not-for-profit. I worked there as the director of finance for 3 years.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what I'm doing in the retail business. So I've learned everything that I know in the last 4 years from the ground up. Some days I still don't think I know what I'm doing, but I think it's better to just acknowledge that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like you've actually got more of your mom's genes than you're giving yourself credit for, because with her being an artist, you're actually creating. Like, that's exactly what you're doing by building out this startup business. You're creating, and you're using that artistic side of your brain, but you're also using the analytic side of your brain as well. So it sounds like the perfect combination of, you know, what's built into you and also, you know, what you're naturally drawn to. So that's great to hear.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to get my mom to listen to the podcast. And then maybe she'll finally acknowledge that I have some of her.
Shout out to mom.
Yeah.
Cool. So you eventually, like, you spent the first 13 years of your life in Delhi, you said. How was your experience growing up in India there?
You know, it was fantastic. India is a very, I'm trying to put this, what do I call it? It's the biggest oxymoron there is, mm-hmm. right? It's the world's largest democracy, largest population of youth under 25 as a country. People vote. There's no voting fraud in India. And then there's also so much you get really used to as a young girl that you can't go out by yourself, or, you know, you always have somebody with you. So it's just, I love the hopefulness of India, of what it stands for, but I've also now come to accept that there's flaws, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's sort of what has, so much of spending my first 13 years there has contributed to entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And also so much of moving here, starting from scratch, like not knowing anybody, how to dress. I mean, my family spoke English from the start, but and Hindi, but it was that was the pivotal point where when my dad brought me here, I didn't know we were moving here. We came just on a vacation. Mm-hmm. I'm doing air quotes, you guys, yep. Vacation. And then we ended up staying here, but I think learning something brand new, like what is the NBA?
Yeah.
What is the NHL? Like and I'm sure you've gone through this moving from Australia. Mm. You know, so sports is a big part of being Canadian. So I think that's that process of newness made me feel it's contributed to helping me at Switch, because everything is new every day and I've had to learn it from the ground up as you do in anything that you start. So yeah, no one's ever asked me that before. So well,
it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, you were talking about your experience of growing up there, and, you know, my understanding of India is really limited. Like, growing up in Australia, I grew up playing cricket my whole life. And I know that cricket's a religion over there, and you've got so much cricket going on over there at the moment. We've actually got a new guy in the warehouse who's from India as well. And him and I just talk about cricket all day. It's awesome. Yeah. But, you know, moving your life from one side of the world to the other with such vast differences in culture must have been a huge challenge for you. But at the age of 13, it's such a unique age to move and uproot your life. And like you just suggested, start from scratch, because 13 and 14 and 15, those formative years, they're so unique in that you're sort of learning not only who you are, your body's changing, there's so much change and you're immersing yourself in a new culture. I can imagine that there would have been a huge shock for you, you know, and with your parents coming out, I mean, they would have had to have assimilated as well. It would have just been a lot of change at once. How was that initial, I'm going to call it a bit of a culture shock. Like it would have been a bit of culture shock, wouldn't it? How were those first couple of years? Did you make friends easily? Like how has that shaped the person that you are today?
Thank you for asking that question. So, you know, the first day was hard. Mm-hmm. The music was great. But going to high school, like I remember my hands were shaking. I think the hardest thing was leaving the friends you have. When you're 13, you're just, your life revolves around your friends.
Yeah.
So leaving that was really, really tough. Leaving my mom was actually very tough. So my parents are divorced, which is also something that wasn't, you know, something that wasn't common in the culture in the 80s or 90s. Fortunately or unfortunately, my parents remained best friends. So we couldn't lie to them because they would talk.
Yeah.
Which is always, as kids, you say there should be a benefit of your parents divorcing, but if they stay friends, then that benefit's gone. So I was very lucky. So I was dealing with, you know, having just a new family as well. My dad remarried. And then when we were here, I think the best thing that happened was that someone, his name is Chris Movatsis, he reached out and just became our friend, like my brother's friend, my friend, kind of just took us under his wing. And that was really amazing. So, you know, I wish that everyone who moved here had someone like a Chris who would invite you to his cottage. He would show up at our house, eat all our food, like make friends with my dad. And that was really, really helpful for our family. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think the other thing was just I had some people in high school that reached out and, you know, became friends. And others that kind of made fun of the way I talked because I did have an Indian accent. And that was also something really hard. I spent years, I would round up Hayden. I would say, oh, I moved here when I was 4. Mm-hmm. I did live that lie through my 20s. Mm-hmm. And then one day I realized, why am I lying? It just doesn't make sense. It's actually one of my strengths that, you know, I know, or like I lived in another country. Like that's actually one of my strengths. And my husband, always, we went back to India together and he was just, I hadn't spoken Hindi in front of him. And when I first did, he was just like in awe. He was like, I don't know why you've been hiding this, but I feel like you're my secret weapon because I need to go to the bathroom and I can't communicate with the person who was driving us. And he was like, you can communicate, tell him I need to go to the bathroom. So I waited, even when I was dating him.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's this shame sometimes with being an immigrant. Right. Like, I don't know why, Hayden. I wish there wasn't, but maybe to someone listening, they felt the same way. I don't know. There was this shame and it took me a long time. And also like marrying Brian, you know, we're in an interracial relationship.
He's Caucasian, is he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
His family is fourth generation British. Right. So, and yeah, it's just, it's been wonderful to have sort of our blended family and, helping me be comfortable with who I am, and also me showing him this different side. So he likes Indian food more than I do. I'm so sick of it, but we order it like twice a week. Yeah. I'm pretty sick of it right now. So I hope that gives you like a little bit of a picture of, you know, I wish, like, I guess if I could go back and tell the 13-year-old and talk to her, I would say, or anyone who's just moved here, it's going to be okay. You're going to find yourself. It's actually a strength. And when you look for someone to love, you don't have to look for someone that looks like you. I think that's what I would go back. So, and tell a 13-year-old.
That's really interesting advice. And it's great to hear that. I'm kind of, it's a very different for me, like moving from Australia to Canada, the cultures are so similar. And obviously I've got white skin as well. And it is a Western culture. So it was quite easy for me to assimilate over here. And, but I can understand that it would have been challenging for you at times, but at the same time, my understanding, I've got family in Toronto as well, and Toronto is such a cultural melting pot, more so than it is here on the West Coast. So you probably landed in the perfect city for that as well. You know, you're very lucky in that respect. You know, the one thing when I was reading your bio on LinkedIn is I noticed that you've obviously got your history at working for Ernst & Young, and that was a 10-year period. And I can only imagine how proud your family were of you when you landed that position and the amount of excitement that you held as well. But throughout that 10-year period, you had an amazing opportunity to really see the inner workings of not only large corporations, but I'd imagine medium-sized businesses as well, and the way that they worked financially. Like, you would have just seen it from every single angle with all of that insight and knowledge that you'd learnt. And I can imagine that that's just given you such a great foundation to launch from into your entrepreneurial career at Switch. So tell us a little bit about the transition from Ernst & Young, where the idea for Switch Grocery came from, and how you decided to pull the trigger on it.
Sure. Okay, let's start.
So let's do it.
let's do it. I actually want to tell you, so let me start with what Switch Grocery is.
Yeah, let's start there.
And where we are today. So switchgrocery.com, where it's an online retail store, and we find, list, curate, and sell innovative food products.
Right.
And they have to be low carb or grain free, like you said. And that's our focus, because we don't sell everything. We're not for everybody. And that was the focus that we decided because that's primarily the way that my family eats. And so it's just what felt the most natural for us. Also, what's interesting is we ship everywhere. So Hayden, as you know, there's the territories, and many online retailers don't ship up north or exclude the territories. And we made that call early on that we wanted to be accessible, especially in this pandemic. It's been so important. We've gotten actually a lot of orders from the territories. So we ship basically everywhere in Canada. And then we also carry only one product per category. So I'm really excited to talk also about how we choose our suppliers and how we end up listing our products. And all of these decisions, interestingly enough, came from my background of almost being a CA and then working in not-for-profit. As early on, I realized you can't do everything, you can't be everything, and you can't be everywhere. That's just, you know, a lot of, there's this phrase that women can have it all, or people can have it all, you can have it all. And I just really don't think that that's possible. And I think the 13 years sort of in working in industry and at Ernst & Young made me realize that it's better to do something focused than to try to be everyone and everything.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think the decision for what Switch is, that's how it really came. From everything that I learned.
And I was also reading on your about section on Switch as well. So it was sort of the idea was sort of born from your own desire and need to switch up your diet as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, so I am insulin resistant. I'm prone to diabetes. I actually had gestational diabetes when I was pregnant. That's just, there's heart disease that runs in my family, dementia. Unfortunately, I think this is the case with many South Asians. We don't have the genes that set us up for success or a long, healthy life.
With a Western diet.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's a Western diet. I think it's just in general, you know. And so I think that I have spent my whole life fighting my genes. I always say that. And it's a really easy example is if Brian tests his blood sugar versus I test my blood sugar, I'm always higher.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have diabetes, and we just do it because we do it for the company when we test products. And just the baseline, my blood sugar is higher. And I'm just saying that because there's nothing to be ashamed of. This is just my genes. I'm insulin resistant. And I think so many people, when they see someone who in their eyes, you know, or what society deems as fit is not fit, they think it's a matter of personal choice and responsibility. And, you know, what I've discovered in my own health journey is that it's not. Actually, many people who are trying to lose weight are trying hard, but they have a set of circumstances, whether it's a combination of genes, combination of being young parents, combination of, you know, again, struggling to put food on the table and all of those things. Mm-hmm. So all of that, I think with my health journey, once I kind of eliminated grain. So I first went paleo. This is all before these diet trends were sexy or everywhere. So once I eliminated grains, I just started to feel better. And then once I went sort of low carb, I've kind of transitioned between keto and low carb. I also started to feel better. So there's this saying that we have, one of our Switch customers, Mina, said it, which is eat the way that makes your body feel good. Mm. And that is different for everybody, right? Sometimes the ice cream, when it's a hot day, makes me feel amazing. And other times it doesn't. So I've now sort of tried to, as you know, with a kid, mm-hmm. flexibility is the name of the game. And so I try to be as flexible as I can within knowing I'm trying to eat what makes my body feel good. And that's sort of what that's the values I channel into Switch.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's great. So, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again, but it seems to be such a common theme with people that I interview that their ideas are really sparked by problems that they're trying to overcome themselves. So when you were working on your diet, were you finding it hard to get a hold of these products, or did you sort of see an opportunity to create something because you had that sort of desire within you that you wanted to build a business at some point in your life?
So I had no desire to build a business. And it's interesting. Mm. I'm sure if you ask many food suppliers, manufacturers, they don't either. They just, as you said, they're just like, I found a snack. This snack did not exist and I had to make it. Mm-hmm. And Hayden, I found those are some of the most interesting and also trustworthy people to work with, because when suppliers come and present to us, do you eat your product? That's like my biggest test, which is, do you eat your own product? Mm-hmm. Do you feed it to your kids, your friends, your family? Mm-hmm. And if you do, then it's good enough for me, right? Mm-hmm. It has to be good enough for you. So yes.
That's perfect. So you launched in late 2016. So tell us a little bit about the early days. How did you get operational?
I think it comes back down to the person that I am. I don't work well alone. Mm-hmm. And I think recognizing that was important because my partner worked at Ernst & Young. That's where we met.
You met at work. Yep.
He was working there and he would come home and he would just say, what did you do today? And I was like, well, I'm Googling products to find and all of these things. And he was just like, I don't think this is working for you. I wrote on LinkedIn in the early days, you can't start a business sitting at home in your pajamas. Mm-hmm. And now you can because of the pandemic, maybe, but back then you couldn't. So I actually went to a commercial kitchen. It's called Food Starter in Toronto. It's now owned by Arlene Dickinson's company, the Canadian Dragon.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
Their district ventures actually stepped in and took it over a couple of years ago, but I stored all our products there. Really, as a retailer, you need to be able to find some money, mm-hmm. Let's just go to the details, find mm-hmm. some money, buy some products, set up a store and have the packaging and all of that to be able to ship. And mm-hmm. Those are the steps that I started at.
Right.
I approached a US, now suppliers approach us, but at the time, the product we started with was Philosophy Protein. We used mm-hmm. to bring that back from the US in our suitcase. Maybe I shouldn't say that on a podcast, but our goal was to bring that in legally and offer it to our customers to sell. So I started really basic, small Shopify site, brought in those products, found a customs broker to be able to do it legally. Yep. I sampled them at a farmer's market in Toronto, St. Lawrence Farmer's Market. Mm-hmm. Through an accelerator, I actually got a spot at the farmer's market.
Right.
So that's sort of how I started. And we did not get funding at the beginning. We used our home line of credit. Like that was the, you know, made a financial decision to do that.
Yeah.
And I would say that having access to the home line was really key because again, you're not going to have sales right away.
Mm. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine. So you sort of bootstrapped it right from the start. Were you looking to get exclusivity on that product that you're bringing up from the States? Was that your initial goal?
Yes.
Cool.
Such a good question.
Are you still carrying that line right now? Like, is this a relationship that sort of stood the test of time and you're still peddling it up here?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, I use it every day. And it's literally the founder Sophie Joppy actually has quite a fantastic Instagram following, and she does a lot, and she's still running the company, and it's one of our top sellers, so we're very happy to carry it. Mm-hmm. But she gave us our shot. I think that's the big thing. Yeah. We needed someone. Like, can you imagine? I showed up, I said, I want to sell your product in Canada. Give me an exclusivity for like a year, right? Don't go to any other retailer. And she just kind of said, okay.
It's meant to be.
So
yeah,
it was meant to be.
That's awesome. So you got the wheels turning with this, this single SKU. At what point did you start bringing on other items?
Quite soon. So we actually tried to pair products. So our first was the protein powder and then a frozen nut milk out of Vancouver, actually. Mm-hmm. It was called Nuez Milk, and it came in frozen bag. Mm. Again, figuring out frozen shipping, carrying it to a farmer's market. Mm. The farmer's market would open at 5:30
yep.
in the morning, and being there. So that was the first. And then within about three, so this is 2017, we started Canada-wide shipping, and then we started to launch other SKUs, other brands, approach other brands almost right away. So by the end of that year, we were up to 7 brands.
Fantastic. So, you know, the farmer's market model is so unique in that you can get the product in front of people, you're getting that, you know, customer validation and feedback, and you can sort out your pricing. Did you go straight to the online model alongside the farmer's market, or was that something that came a little down the track?
Great question. We started at a farmer's market, and we only started to sample. Mm. Our first market, farmer's market, was we're not selling.
All right.
What we were doing, Hayden, which really helped, was I was on Instagram. And at that time, Instagram, the organic reach was really great. You could just do a post and get new followers. Yep. And now you can't. It's sort of like it was now TikTok. You could do that in LinkedIn, but not Instagram. So at that time, before I even started the company, I just went online on Instagram January 2017. And I started cooking, making things. And so I took everybody on to the farmer's market with us. Mm-hmm. And then I did an Instagram live there. And then the second farmer's market I sold, and then came now we're ready to launch our platform, set up Shopify, and then get a little bit, you know, get a couple of more SKUs, approach our other brands. So we started shipping in August. So it was a period of 6 months.
Mm. I'm really glad that I'm having the opportunity to speak to you, because you're the first retailer that I've actually had an opportunity to talk to, because as you know, I've been speaking to, you know, food-based CBG businesses, distributors and so on. And the reason that I really wanted to speak to you as a retailer is to get some insight into what a CPG business, or, you know, somebody that's got a product, the way that they could work with you to get listed. So let's talk a little bit about the best way for somebody to get listed with a retailer like yourself, and especially an online retailer where you've got such great reach. Like, what are you looking for in particular, and what's your process?
Well, there's, I would say, 4 to 5 things that we look for, Hayden. Mm-hmm. The first one is taste.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you don't have taste, if you're a product, if someone does not taste your product, and they're not over the moon, and like, you know this, you go to a wedding and you leave the wedding and it's, how is the food?
Yeah, every time. Yeah.
Or you take your long flight back to Australia and you're just like, you land and you're like, I'm so hungry because the food on the plane sucked, right?
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
So taste, and I see this so much, because we still get products right now, and I don't know, I'm not really good yet at giving feedback because I don't like to kill dreams. But sometimes I have a food product and I'm just like, you've gone through so much effort to manufacture this, make it, packaging, make it shelf stable. You gotta have the taste down. Like, it's gotta be, and I'm snapping my fingers, it's gotta be wow. Like, someone has something, they're already buying a packaged product, not a real food. They need to be wowed. So taste is the first. The second specifically is low carb or grain free. And that's just our model. Like, if it's another retailer like Loblaws or Save On Foods, you know, I have a couple buyer friends there, and they're always looking for a trendy product. And I think low carb and grain free, the trends are here to stay. So there is some synergy there, but low sugar, like all of these things are really important. And for us, the other thing we look for is one per category. So I'm just learning this also within our categories, but if you're going to make a product that is a condiment, in general, Canadians don't move through condiments as fast. as they do snacks.
Right.
Right. So those are just things to kind of think about, which is the category that as a retailer personally who does not carry 50,000 SKUs, I'm going to be thinking of how much of this can I sell?
Yeah.
Does this serve our customers to come back? Or is this something they'll buy once a year and they'll forget about it in their pantry? So the one per category, we carry one per category. The category it's in is important. And then the last thing is you have to be doing something different. That's just, and again, and I don't think that's just the food business. Mm-hmm. And by what I mean by that is the brands that we carry have either sustainable packaging, fair wages for farmers, knowing their product inside out, being really good marketers, donating, like all of these things. You just have to be doing one thing that's different. And that different thing could also be knowing your product inside out. So we carry a meal replacement, which sounds like a fad, but it's not. It's the founder, it's one of our largest sellers. The founder actually is a father of six. And which you already know, he knows every ingredient inside out. He's provided his recipe for free. So you can source those ingredients and make it. So he's just facilitated that trust, you know, that I drink this, I'm going to do a challenge just drinking this. So that's sort of what we look for specifically in terms of our vetting process.
Right. And are you looking for businesses that are already established, or are you happy to give somebody a go right from the start as well and sort of grow with somebody too? Or are you looking for somebody within a, you know, with a certain amount of reach already, whether it's, you know, reach through their branding and their marketing campaigns, or whether they're listed already with other retailers? Like, what's your specific, what is it that you're looking for in terms of the scope and size of a business?
So we really focus on early stage because that was the main thing. That was the main reason I started the business, Hayden, which was it takes a brand 5 years and a lot of money to get inside a Loblaws or a Save-On-Foods.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've also noticed that traffic in independent retailers, like in physical store retailers before the pandemic, was actually doubling, tripling every year.
Yeah.
And traffic for online was also doubling, tripling every year. But in, those are just your trends. But for us, we really, really look for early stage. And then we try to grow with them, grow with our brands, grow them. So in some ways, almost the more established brands in our store are carrying the small, the startup brands. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it also gives the consumer out there a place to go for these unique like brands as well, because, you know, obviously here on the West Coast, we're familiar with the startup brands here, but we're not familiar with the startup brands in Toronto, for example. But with an online retailer, you really get the opportunity to spread the word. So it can give somebody like an Eve's Crackers a way to break into new markets. I had Eve on the podcast a while ago and she was so great. I love her story and I can totally see why you cherry picked her business as well.
For sure. And she, you know, when we started talking to her, she didn't know that her product was zero carb. Like she knew, but because she's not keto herself or low carb herself, you know, our customers love Eve's Crackers.
Yeah.
Like they just, they're absolutely love them. And so I think part of it is also, we're always looking and thinking through our customers. I think the other thing that is really important for us as a retailer is we're really close to our customers. So I don't, we haven't talked about that because I think this is more for suppliers, but I think that's what I love doing. And also just because so many of our customers are also low carb, grain free, or on specific dietary restrictions. What's been really amazing is we've been able to help some suppliers. They actually send us new SKUs to test. And then either we can send them to a couple of our customers or our team and figure out, is this something that, you know, I would switch this ingredient out, or this is what we're looking for. So that's been really helpful that we've been able to provide input from a market research perspective.
That's so invaluable. Like all of that information for a business is just, you know, to be able to get that insight at such a an early point, you know, when doing some product testing is just, yeah, so valuable and something that can be at times really hard to get. So is that a service that you've built in, or is that just something that you've only started doing recently?
It's just been built in, I think, from the start, because again, we are so connected to our customers. We have a, we call them our customer friends.
Right.
We have a closed Facebook group of about 1500 people and purchasers. So, they've purchased from us. And so I've often gone in there and kind of done some, you know, if the brand is comfortable saying they're doing market research, most brands are not. So I'll go in there and say, hey, this is what a brand is looking for. Or whatever the case is, what do you think? Or I'll just know, just because I also am looking for the same thing.
Yeah.
So I know what categories need some more products out there. So that's not something that somebody's asked us many times. They're like, why doesn't your business model become charging suppliers? I just don't believe in that. Mm-hmm. Like, then what makes me different from another large retailer? Like, you have to pay to list at a large retailer.
Yeah.
I don't really want you to have to pay to list with Switch.
Right. So yeah. Okay. So you don't have a listing fee. So the way you operate is you just take the margin that's involved. So talk to me a little bit about the mechanics of the pricing structure that works not at like for Switch, but also with your suppliers as well. Like, can you give some insight into the amount of margin that you're looking to take out of their product so that they can build that into their product when they're figuring out their recommended retail price and so on?
Yeah, definitely. So we do not, so in Canada, basically a retailer wants 30%.
30, yeah.
Distributor wants 40%. Mm-hmm. And I don't think customers actually know this, but majority of the cost is transportation to the stores.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. And then obviously you have a broker sometimes who looks for 5%, and then you have your own margin to make, right? So in class, I had actually learned that if your product cost is $2, your materials are $2, you got to be ready to price it at 10. So with our model, and I think that with a lot of online stores, what's obviously different is that we don't take a distributor margin and a retailer margin. Like, we're not looking for 70%, but some of our suppliers have come to us and offered 30% margins. That's not, unfortunately, what we can do with our store. And sometimes I still take them because I'm like, I believe in your product and I'll help you. But, you know, we have a team who is putting out recipes. I'm going on Instagram every day.
Yeah.
And we're really we're making recipes, putting them on our site, sharing them back with them for free. Our business model is such that we need at least 40%. And that's just to also cover, you know, we cover shipping. For Canadian brands in general, you have to have a certain level to be able to get free shipping to you, to America.
Yep.
For American brands, we cover shipping to us. And so with all of those costs and also getting the word out and what we spend on ads, which we can talk about, we are not, like, 30% is not, and I say it, 30% does not make me get out of bed.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. So 40 points is what you're looking for. So I'd love to.
Sometimes we get 50, sometimes we get
35, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And that's at an average. Sometimes we get 50 because they're just like, we need marketing help. Can you give us all your recipes?
Yeah.
Can you send us all your product photos? Can you and we provide all of that?
Yeah. Understood. That's really good. Great insight for somebody out there. The one thing that I find that can be most challenging for whether it's a brand that has their own retail store or their own online store and they're selling direct to consumers is the cost of shipping out to the consumer. Tell us a little bit about the way that you've been able to sort of streamline that component of the business, because I do notice that, you know, you have reach and you've made the decision to ship right across the country. And I can imagine there would be a huge cost associated with that. So walk us through a little bit about your shipping model, if you could.
Sure. No problem.
Yeah.
I'm smiling because you're asking such great specific questions, and I've listened to some of your other podcasts, and I'm just giving a shout out to your podcast. Like, if something like this existed when I was starting out my food business, it would be so different, because I think so many of us in the CPG are not looking for motivation. Like, we're not looking for the inspirational, motivational speaker. We just need help. We need, like, a question answered or something like that. So just
thanks
for asking such real specific questions.
Like, oh, thank you. Yeah, no, we're trying to allow the listener out there to pack heavy. Like, that's where the name of the podcast came from. Like, we want you to pack heavy with all of the information that you need to see some success within your business. So Yeah, I back at the start of the podcast, you were off getting your headphones, but I just laid down a little track asking for the audience out there to give some feedback because, you know, I've got a bit of an idea as to sort of the information that everybody's looking for their business, like whether you're a small, you know, startup business or you're a medium and you're growing. And but I'd love to get some feedback from the listeners. So just if you'd love to shoot me an email, and I'd love to hear your questions and be able to field them with people like Naya as well, so that we can get all of that information into your hands. So yeah, sorry, back to the show.
No, I love that. So shipping, let me tell you, yeah, literally please. Everything, because shipping can make or break your business, yep. Right? You know, and we have I actually put out a blog post about this on our site as well, but our shipping policy at the beginning was flat rate. Mm-hmm. So $9.99, which is higher than our competitors, and free shipping over $149. Mm-hmm. And so I made that decision because to ship anywhere in Canada on average is about $14 to $15. So as a supplier, if you're doing D2C, you have two choices. You can either charge your customers for shipping, mm-hmm. or you can reduce your shipping costs. Mm-hmm. It's best to do both. Mm. And so let's talk about shipping costs because that's easier to like look at and control.
Yeah.
So shipping costs, small box. We do the smallest box possible. We do brown paper. We have no extra packaging, and that's literally what we do. And that's dropped our shipping box sizes. So like, you know, we're looking at 6x4x4, which is 6x4x4, smallest box. If we can stuff something in, we will. Mm-hmm. We use products to pad. And I think this is why it was really important for us before we went to a fulfillment center. We packed ourselves for 2 years. And I would just find that when I would weigh a box and calculate the dimensions, I would get a higher shipping rate for a larger box and a smaller shipping rate for a smaller box. Mm-hmm. So that's on box sizes. The second is getting better shipping quotes. We use a platform called eShipper, which mm-hmm. is also what we use for our fulfillment center. But any, you know, like you can do some searches for brokers who offer less, you know, shipping at lower prices. The eShipper platform came recommended to me again from the food CPG accelerator that I was at, mm-hmm. Foodstarter. Another person said, try eShipper. They connected into our Shopify and they have rates with UPS, Canada Post, Canpar, et cetera. So I would see all of the rates and that really helped bring down our shipping.
Yeah. Costs. Yeah.
So those are the two from a cost perspective. The revenue perspective is a lot harder because I'm realizing, Peyton, that shipping is a barrier. Mm. And people, like, I knew this because one of my friends, I talked to her and she's like, hey, like, do you mind giving me free shipping? And I'm like, sure, whatever. Like, you're my friend, here's free shipping. And she's like, but you don't have to cover that, right? And I was like, sorry, what?
Where's it coming from? Yeah.
And I said, I was like, of course I cover that. Like, who else covers that? She's like, oh, like, when I order on Amazon, like, it just, like, who covers it? I'm like, I really? It's just, so the education for like customers do not understand shipping. Mm. Most customers, I would say, because of Amazon and all of that. So you need to like really think through what is that cost? Like, what are you going to charge them? So initially we did $9.99 flat rate shipping. And I would also say the flat rate shipping plus our higher free shipping threshold has encouraged larger baskets. Mm-hmm. That's really important to me because I would rather that a customer does a larger order every 2 months versus 4 small orders over, right? So so that's better for the environment. It's better for my business. It's better for their pockets. So the $149, a higher shipping threshold for us has helped with cart mm-hmm. sizes. And then the flat rate shipping was $9.99, but we dropped it to $6.99. We only dropped it 3 years in. And actually it's, if you go to our site, it's pretty complicated, but it kind of shows you the motivation of our shipping strategy. If you order like less than $25, you have to pay $14.99 for shipping. Mm-hmm. If you're over $40, it drops to $6.99.
Yeah.
So we're trying to say at least do a $40 part because our average cost to ship anywhere in Canada is between $12 to $14.
Yes.
So we need you to do that. So Does that help kind of walk through?
No, it absolutely does. Yeah. I mean, it's such a challenge out there right now. And as you suggested, having a platform that can break down and, you know, you can provide you with shipping quotes is so valuable. We use exactly the same system, just a different company for our own shipping purposes. And we've also got our own truck on the road as well. So we've sort of got our local deliveries heading out via our own truck, which is awesome. Yeah. And we've split it out into regions, but you know, as soon as you get out of the greater Vancouver area, where you using couriers and we're using other shipping companies. And yeah, it's a significant cost. And if you can reduce that cost, absolutely. But if you can also either build some into your margins, so, you know, you capture some extra margin in there, but at the same time, your consumers are sort of, they can shop around as well for products and they know what the going rate for a product is. So you've sort of got that glass ceiling. So having a shipping cost associated, like a flat rate shipping cost, makes so much sense. And, you know, I think you're right. I think the consumer has really been trained by Amazon that shipping is something that should be just thrown in, but it's just not the reality of the world that we live in. But for a large scale organization like an Amazon, that is their reality, just due to the huge volumes that they are getting out the door. And also because they are able to partner up with a lot of these freight and shipping companies to be able to get the best rates possible. So it's just not the reality for small businesses, unfortunately, is it?
Yeah. And I think just because Amazon is doing it doesn't mean it's good. So mm-hmm. we do a lot of education with our customer friends. I feel yeah. like our customers are amazing. They always recognize our, like, we've had Instagram stories of an Amazon box versus mm-hmm. a small box, yeah. like versus a Switch box. And just because Amazon can do it doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
So you also asked about free shipping on the first order. So I think it also depends on the goal. Like
yeah.
you are as a small food company wanting to get your food product out there mm-hmm. and you are in early stages, offer the free shipping and know you'll take the loss. But in time, you want to say, you know what, it's more important for me to, because it's a lot harder to like introduce a shipping fee than to like, you know, than to basically start with it. So
yeah, yeah.
It's just a decision that you need to make based on your goals, I
yeah.
would say.
Yeah, yeah. Let's shift gears a little bit here. I love that you just broke down the mechanics of sort of the insight of your business and how it operates. I'd love to know how, well, let me just go back one step further. So you're at a position where you are going through another growth phase right now, and you've made it really well known. And I love the fact that you're so honest and transparent on LinkedIn. I love following you on LinkedIn because of your posts. But one of the posts that really caught my eye a while back was the fact that you were just funded by ClearCo's Clear Angel, which is Michelle Romanow's company. And she's obviously from Dragon's Den. And then there's the CEO, Andrew DeSouza, as well. So both extremely well-known entrepreneurs out there. Tell us a little bit about your experience on the funding and how you set up your business so that it was ready to sort of receive some funding and also be investable, if that's sort of the right terminology to use.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. That's a great question too, Hayden, because I had to think it through. I mean, I'm 4 years in and I had to really think about what is it about us that made them believe in us and invest. Mm. So I think the first thing is definitely revenue. We just go like especially in Canada, like, you know, you just got to have revenue before you yep. go for funding. That's just, you can do it organically. You can do it by ads. You can figure out your strengths. So for us, it was, we had revenue and we were actually looking, we were looking to self-fund at the beginning. We were just like, you know, let's just not, we weren't doing ads. We were just growing organically.
Yeah.
Which later we can talk about was one of probably the biggest mistakes I made by leaving money on the table. Mm-hmm. But really for us, we built customers, built revenue, built a relationship with our suppliers, which, you know, stands the test of time today. And I would say that what happened was when I got pregnant, we had, by the time, like, our sales started to drop
yeah.
and we had lost out. So again, to sort of step back, when someone comes to your online store, when someone comes to buy from you, they're either going to try you for the first time and not come back
yeah.
or their taste might change, right? You eat the same product and then at some point your taste changes. So you're going to have that customer attrition. And I think I was taking it very personally at the time. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't investing in ads, right? I was just mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm going to keep trying to go organically, which a lot of founders do. And when we saw that our returning customer rates, like the level between getting new customers and returning was, you know, was switching. Mm-hmm. that's sort of where we changed and decided to go out. ClearBank at the time was, you know, smaller. Mm. It was in 2019, and they have an ad product. So their ad product is you go, you basically dial into their system and they lend you money to run ads. Mm-hmm. Google, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, anywhere. Mm-hmm. That money can only be spent on ads, and then right. you pay it back at 6%. That's what we signed up for. And honestly, just lit a fire under our butts. We had to run ads. We had to learn how to run ads and just get out there. That mm-hmm. started being very successful, and they saw the traction. So they would just call us and say, okay, we started with 10,000. We're going to increase. We're mm-hmm. going to increase. We are, you know, not to get into specifics, but like in a range, we are now in the hundreds of thousands of dollars funded through them on their ad product.
Yep.
And it's also, I think it's a great, great opportunity and a great product. They don't pay me to say this. We would not be here without that product. Mm. After that, they came out with Clear Angel, which is another program. It is, if you watch Dragon's Den, it's probably like Kevin, Mr. Wonderful's deal. He's always yep. about yep. royalties.
Yeah.
So they offered us 2% royalty for a flat amount. Mm-hmm. And then they also offered us an advisor. Now, we've been approached by BDC, right? Like yep. BDC has given
Business
us a loan.
Development Canada. Yep.
Yeah. And they wanted to give us a loan at 10% interest rate, which, as you know, was very high. This is pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
And I remember the meeting with their account manager. They didn't have as much, like, I love BDC, but I was looking for that sort of business experience. And so with Clear Angel, the founder we met, we actually interviewed them as well. And we had a great conversation. He's sold businesses. He understands, like, even just being able to tell him and say, hey, I have another job. I also do not-for-profit consulting. Like, imagine telling an investor that. Mm. They're just going to be like, get out of here, mm-hmm. you know? And he literally looked at me and he said, we are founder friendly. We support real families. Mm-hmm. We understand that your kids are at home with you. This is like the time of remote schooling, daycare shutting down. Like, this is first shutdown mm-hmm. also. You don't find investors like that, right? So many founders they work with have side gigs or whatever the case is. But having somebody to be accountable who understands business, family pressures, not pressures, but that you also want to
reality. Yeah. The reality of life. Yeah.
Life, is great. And so he's like, you can move at your own pace, but I'm going to push you. Mm-hmm. So he'll ask me, you know, we're hiring for customer service. And now I know we have to meet with him tomorrow, Hayden. Mm-hmm. So I posted the job last week. Mm-hmm.
And I saw that. Yeah.
People 4 days to apply, but I did that because I respond really well to accountability. Mm-hmm. And so now I can go to him and tomorrow say I have shortlisted people and I have interviews set up for the weekend.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how the process went. Mm-hmm. Clearco has a lot of PR. So that's the other thing you can dial into, which is because I actually did a reference for them and they asked me, they're like, what's so different about them? And I said, you know, most investors, they don't have a massive, they're not a $2 billion company mm. who is like a massive PR and marketing team who's there to support you. Mm-hmm. Like if you call them and say, you know what, I'm really looking for some PR. I want to get my name out there. I don't think they would say no. Mm. So that's what sets them apart. They're just super founder friendly and they're just there to help you. And they're okay to use all of their resources to do that. So they featured me for International Women's Day. I didn't ask, but I just said, I would like to start seeing more immigrant women. Like,
that was such a good ad.
Oh, thank you so much.
That was awesome. Yeah, yeah. I watched that. And what I'll do is I'll actually throw the ad up in the show notes so everybody can see it. But it was so powerful and it was so, it was inspirational. And I don't say that lightly, but it was a really cool ad and it was really well put together. So it was cool to see your feature on that.
Yeah, it was, the ad was actually, it was based on two founders' stories.
Yeah.
We wrote, like, you guys have kids and you yeah. know your life changes when you have
kids. Yes, it does.
And they asked me about postpartum, like yeah. really questions that people don't ask about, like, what did you go through postpartum?
Yeah.
Like, why did, you know, all of these things. And I wrote about that, the belief in myself, almost mm-hmm. losing Twitch. And they channeled that and another founder into a poem, mm-hmm. which was written by a Black poet in Toronto. Yeah. And it was probably therapy for me, but yep. I didn't ask them for it. Mm-hmm. I didn't like market myself. I didn't whatever. They really just wanted to get the story out.
Yes. No, fantastic. I'm so glad to hear that you've had a great experience in getting your funding like that. I'd love to hear a little bit more about the accountability that you're roped into or that you're tied into with Clear Angel. And you said that you've got the, is it a dedicated, would it be called a mentor that you've got working for you, or how do they sort of label it?
They label it as an advisor.
An advisor, yeah. So this dedicated advisor, how often do you meet with the person, and what are you sort of, do you have to meet certain KPIs, or what is it exactly? What are the deliverables that they're looking for?
It really depends on the business. So they have a platform. Yep. I love their platform because all of their platforms are really amazing, but there's yep. valuation, there's KPIs, yep. returning customer rate, yep. Conversion, all of the ones that you need to keep an eye out. Cost to convert. But we meet with them for half an hour every 3 to 4 weeks.
Yes.
And can I tell you how much I love that, Hayden? Because yeah. again, I don't have to create big reports. There's no like deliverable, like where I'm spending time. Like I always say, like I need to spend time with customers.
Yes.
I don't have time to fundraise. Like if you want me to build my business, then I need to be with my customers.
Yeah.
And that's what I enjoy doing. So and this is like another post I did on LinkedIn, but I don't think I need a mentor.
Mm.
And I don't
think that was a great post. That was a great post. I read through that and I totally understood right at the start, sort of the whole premise of what you're looking for. And the amount of feedback that you got on that post was phenomenal as well. You got some great comments in that section.
Well, and I think Hayden, let's talk about it. You're right now my mentor. You're asking me questions about the business. You're giving me a chance to reflect on the business.
Mm-hmm.
You're also mentoring anyone who's listening because you're asking questions that's going to help them. So this is sort of, but this is not a traditional mentor relationship.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Like that's why I was really silent in the beginning when you were like, hey, you're an immigrant. And like, how was the first 13 years of your life in Delhi like? And I'm like, I have never examined that in my life.
Mm.
So I was stuttering because I'm like, nobody has ever asked me that. Most people tell me to forget about it and move on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you mentored me today. So I think for me, I think what I like about ClearCo and Clear Angel is, well, they ask me a question and just that question helps me then focus.
Yeah.
I also talked to my friends at truLOCAL. That's a company that sold for $16 million.
And yeah, I saw that.
So lucky to know, Irma and Mark, and I had a Zoom with them on a Friday night for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And all they did, like I thought they were going to give me tactical advice, was they stunned me by just asking me a question.
Mm.
And that question then changed the trajectory of my business because yeah. I had to make a choice. So that's all I'm saying. Like, I think mentoring is just asking the right question. And I think that's what ClearCo is there. Mm-hmm. They're just like, okay, well, if you can only work on your business one day a week, what's the most important thing? And then all of a sudden you can't say Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, because they're going to say, well, you can't do all that. So which one is it going to be? And that's all you needed. You don't need to sit with someone for 6 hours. You mm-hmm. don't have time to sit with someone for 6 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. You know, it sounds as if you've got some really great momentum going with the business right now. Where do you see it going over the next 5 years? Like, what's the vision?
So initially my vision was that we would end up being part of a large retailer. And what I really want to do is have brands get their shot.
Yeah.
That's it. I want so many brands to have their shot. And I want our customers to have accessibility to the products they want and need.
Mm-hmm.
That's just why I do what I do. So I thought that my vision when I started Switch was that we would be like, you walk into a large retailer and then you would have Switch grocery shelf, which a brand where they don't pay listing fees, they don't do whatever.
Yeah.
Now knowing the reality of margins, I know that that's difficult. So what we started doing is we are working with our brands to take them where they want to go, which is mm-hmm. crazy. But I passed on a big opportunity where one of our US brands reached out to us and said, Neha, list me on Amazon Canada. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. And I didn't want to do that. But then she's now listed on Amazon Canada. Her price is higher than Switch's,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't really matter because Amazon is Amazon. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the biggest mistakes I made. I passed on. It's almost like you help a brand grow. Well, what next, right? They want mm-hmm. to go into more retailers. So I think what we're now working on is that end of our business, which is we're a distributor for a couple of products for our US brands. So we do sell them to small stores. We also now are working to list, we've listed one of our brands on Amazon Canada and then have learned the process there because Amazon is a whole beast.
It is.
And this way we can support our suppliers all the way.
Mm. All right. So they're sending pallets to you, you're warehousing it, and then you're sending it to the Amazon Fulfillment Center. Is that how it's working?
Yeah.
And sort of managing that component of their business for them.
Exactly. And half the pallet would go to our Switch Grocery e-commerce site and the other half would go to Amazon.
That's awesome. Because that whole Amazon piece is an absolute beast. And if you could manage that for somebody, that's such a value add, and something that separates you from everybody else out there. That's really cool.
For sure.
Yeah.
I know, Hayden, there was a question that we had wanted to get to, which was about like advice for brands.
Yeah, that's right.
Starting out with retailers.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that
one? Yeah. My question was, do you have any advice for brands that are starting out and looking to partner with retailers? Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear all about that.
Okay. Yes. And so much.
Yeah.
And this is from all of the mistakes I've made, but also from talking to our brands with us that have been successful.
Yeah.
So I will say, number one, the most of our more successful, financially successful brands mm-hmm. are those that have had focus.
Mm.
So they've either, you can't do D2C, you can't do independent retailers, large retailers, and Amazon.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work.
You're spread way too thin. Yeah.
And your pricing is all over the map because your pricing for Amazon has to be higher, mm-hmm. especially if you're doing FBA fulfillment by Amazon. Your pricing for DTC, your pricing to your retailers, like it's just all over the map. So I think deciding the channel is the most important because that's the other question I also ask as a retailer, right? Like if you're coming to list with Switch, I'm going to say, what are your plans? Are you going to go on Amazon? Is your price going to be the same, less than ours, higher than ours? Like that's one. So pricing, I think, is really, really comes from also the channel. A brand out West has done this really well, Fatso, which is the peanut butter company.
Very familiar. Yep.
I talked to the founder very early on. She literally told me she wanted to make a product that's accessible in terms of pricing.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't care. So she'll take probably much lower margins on her product, but she wants it to be everywhere.
Volume-based game.
Yeah. And that's okay. Like that's, but she made that call and she went all in on that call.
That's her model. Yep.
Yeah. And we still carry her products, even though it's available in other stores. And our customers have even asked us, they're like, why do you still carry your product? And I'm like, I like her product. And then we still get like volume discounts from being one of the earlier retailers, which is great.
Yeah. And I've noticed she's constantly adding new SKUs and variety as well. Like she's building out her business model, not only based on volume and getting product out there, but also by increasing the amount of, the SKUs for the consumer as well.
She's so smart.
Yeah.
Like, I really admire her and respect her because she just knows what she wants and just went for it.
Yeah, I had a really good chat with her at a trade show a few years ago, and it's amazing the amount of growth that she's done in those last 2 years.
Yeah. I love it. The other thing was content.
Uh-huh.
So I think this is the conversation I have with our suppliers all the time where I'm like, you just have to be out there.
Uh-huh.
Like no one can sell your product better than you can. So you need to kind of decide and say, is it going to be video, audio, written word, or YouTube? Like, obviously, you're great at podcasts. So this is like your strength. And so if that's the way that they're going to be great, like, it's not that you're going to list your product at Switch Grocery and you can just take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to move your product at anywhere, whether it's DTC, Amazon, or whatever the case is. So I think, LinkedIn for me, I really enjoy it.
Yeah, so, and I love reading your content as well. It's awesome. You're so willing, to come forward with information, not only on the business, but also all of your personal insights as well. It's really cool.
Thank you. But I enjoy that. So I chose like 6 months ago, I could have gone on TikTok versus mm-hmm. LinkedIn, but I chose LinkedIn because I just would enjoy that more.
Yeah. And that's where your audience is found. That's where all of your network and your partners can be found as well.
Totally. So that was another thing of just having that realization that products don't move by themselves. Like I wish our suppliers would come to us and say, hey, Neha, can you do an Instagram live with me? Mm-hmm. Like I'm available. Mm-hmm. Right. And I get that they're manufacturing and they're busy,
mm-hmm.
but like having that, like helping your retailers by giving them content, not just sending a graphic, but like actually saying, I want to talk to your customers.
Yeah.
If a supplier came, one of my suppliers came and said, could you do a meetup for me with your customers for half an hour? Mm-hmm. It would be insane. Like, yes. I would love that. And then the last decision is really just making the decision on ads versus organic.
Right.
And I think that if you only, if you don't have the money for ads, there's no money,
yep.
then you say, where can I go and get organic reach? And that, unfortunately, right now is TikTok, which I know yep. people are like scared of, but it's TikTok and it's LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Probably Clubhouse as well. But you just need to realize that's where, like, or Instagram Reels, but mm-hmm. not Instagram posts. So mm-hmm. you just have to really be all in and realize, okay, I can't afford ads. I got to go all in on the four platforms where I can get reach.
Yeah.
You have ads. This is also a really tactical piece of advice. You have to have a Facebook retargeting ad. Mm-hmm. If there's only one thing you get from this conversation and you're a food supplier, just go set up a retargeting ad for the cost of coffee a day, which is mm-hmm. $5.
Yeah.
Because all the traffic, the people who are coming to your site, they're just going to forget about you.
Yeah.
But when they see a retargeting ad, they'll come back. So at least the effort of your organic reach is like coming full circle because you're inviting them back to your site.
Got you.
Like, I went to a candle company and I didn't press purchase. Like, I was given, you know, I just saw it organically.
Yeah.
I can't find that candle company anymore, Hayden. And I'm like, why are they not retargeting? Like, I forgot the name. I found them on Instagram. Somebody yeah. recommended it.
Yeah.
I even had a cart set up.
Yeah.
Just never heard back. So
yeah,
like,
usually it'll haunt you in your dreams when, you know, when you come across a website, it'll follow you wherever you go. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like, some of our customers are like, I see Switch everywhere. And yeah. I used to be so ashamed of that. And now I'm like, I'm proud. I want to reach more Canadians.
Yeah,
like,
100%.
Over the embarrassment of ads. Like, I need to reach more Canadians that yep. I'm proud of what I sell. So I'm here to sell, you know?
That's awesome. That's awesome. Sort
of the concrete advice I had for suppliers, brands starting out.
Fantastic. That's all such great advice. I really appreciate you putting in the time to think about that as well. And just for all of the listeners out there, prior to the show, I always send a bunch of questions to the person that I'm interviewing, just so that they're, you know, we're all prepared and we're all on the same page. But Naya actually went to the trouble of, you know, not only filling out the questions prior to the episode going live, but there was just so much insight in that as well. So thank you so much for, you know, taking the time and the effort to have a really detailed conversation with me today for everybody out there listening. You know, as I mentioned, the show that I've got here is called the Pack Heavy Podcast. And I know that everybody out there is packing heavy a little bit more today than they were prior to listening to the episode. So thank you very, very much.
You're so welcome.
Yeah, I'm glad you came on. And I'd love to have you on again in the near future, because I think there's so much more that you and I can speak to. And even if we had an episode specifically tied to the Facebook ads as well and the reoccurring ads, even if it was just like a short 20-minute episode, I think that would be really valuable for out there, everybody out there listening.
Amazing. I'm here.
Awesome. Well, look, thank you very much for your time today. Enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll speak to you again soon.
I will. Thanks, Hayden.
Take care. Bye. Thanks for listening today. If you have any questions from today's episode or would like to know more about what I can do to help you achieve your packaging vision, you can reach me directly at hayden@thepackheavypodcast.com. You could DM me on Instagram @thepackheavypodcast, or we could also connect on LinkedIn and start a conversation there. I'll see you next week.